The Apple Vision Pro is in the house, and in this episode, we're talking about what it's really like to use the new headset. Stay tuned to the Macworld podcast and find out. Welcome to the Macworld podcast. I'm Roman Loyola here with Jason Cross.
Good morning.
And Michael Simon.
Hello, sir.
Jason got an Apple Vision Pro, and he's still working on the review, which will cover whether you should go buy one or not and all the big picture stuff. And we'll talk about that in next week's podcast. But for today's show, I guess Jason is basically holding kind of like a press conference to talk about the hands-on experience. Mike and I are basically just going to ask him questions about his experience. So that way you, the listener, can get an idea of what it's like to use the Vision Pro. And Jason's actually using the Vision Pro right now in our virtual meeting in Zoom.
The Zoom spatial app, their app. And so they're looking at my weird persona, my very awkward, waxy self.
I have a question, Jason. How come you don't have any ears?
I do not know. It did not put ear. I mean, if I turn my head sideways, you can see ears.
Yeah, I can see them. They're there, but
head
they're
on,
like
they don't stick out at your all. Head. And it makes me look like a poorly constructed Android.
From the person looking at you, it's obvious that it's not you. If I didn't know you were wearing a Vision Pro, I would be like, all right, he has some kind of a filter
avatar
on of something.
Yeah, it's just some weird 3D avatar skin.
So Apple could have just used like an emoji, and it could have been a highly cartoonized version.
Yeah, or your Memoji, whatever, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They could have done any of that. So they chose to do this hyper-realistic persona. It's still in beta. And so looking at Jason, he's been on the call for about 5 minutes. I called him also the other night, so I'm a little used to it. Once you get over the initial, like, okay, you look a little weird. Like I said, I made a joke. He doesn't have ears. Like, so is the sides of his face just go straight down. Top of his head is like an oval. But once you get past all that, it's pretty damn amazing what Apple has created. The contours of his face, the shading on his face,
the shape,
freckles and things and marks.
If I had more of a beard, it has
pretty
a tendency
incredible
to make a beard just look like a flat object. Like it doesn't look like hair. Same with the hair on your head.
They clearly have stuff to work on.
Yeah. Same with the hair on your head. Like my hair doesn't have a lot of volume anyway, but it has none in mine. But if it did,
Hey, we lost your audio, Jason.
We lost your audio, Jason. Could you repeat what you just said?
Also turn on your audio. We can't hear you. I'm not sure what happened.
Yeah. It's weird. It just dropped out.
I don't know. It was like literally mid-sentence.
Hey, everyone. This is Roman interjecting here as I'm editing this. So what happened was Jason's connection seemed to have dropped off, at least the audio part of it, and we couldn't get it working again. So it took a couple minutes before we decided to just give up and have him leave the Zoom meeting and join us back in without the Vision Pro on this time. So we're going to pick up when he rejoins us in the Zoom meeting. So Jason's back without the Vision Pro. It's a 1.0 product, and Zoom seemed to have conked out on us.
Before Jason continues, all right, so now his persona's gone, and he looks a lot different.
And I have a different shirt.
Like, it's definitely... Well, yeah, right. There's all that. But even before you put them on, like, it's a different. So what Apple has done is very impressive, but it's also very clear that there's a long way to go before they're like usable, for lack of a better word, as a true avatar for a person. But
we talked about before about how Facebook has their what they call their codec avatars. They're not shipping. But they're created with, like, right now they use special software and hardware to scan it, but it's eventually just supposed to be you just wave your phone around your head. And then they have cameras to watch you to make the animation and everything. But but eventually it's going to be their version of what this is, what it tracks you using the...
But when he says eventually, that could be a decade. Like, it's still... Facebook says it's like research and development mode. Like, they're nowhere near.
I don't even think 5 years. I think they're going to ship it whatever the next Meta Quest headset is. It's just going to have enough downward-facing camera, and they're going to ship it. I mean, they're going to... They don't get to the point where they show it and they start doing interviews in that mode and stuff like that if it's so far off that it's like, this isn't even a real thing. Like, they've had journalists do interviews like in using that and stuff. So it's maybe a couple years away or something, but it's a completely different animal than this, right? Like, this is shipping and it's something you can do, and you take the headset off and point it at your face and you do the scan yourself and you just put it back on. But in terms of the quality, theirs looks like a sort of like if a movie studio did a CG version view, right? And Apple's looks like a strange wax museum model come to life. Yeah, they've got a ways to go. It's interesting to see. I wish they kind of, in the meantime, also did the like, yeah, just animate my emoji. Just let me choose to let that be myself.
Right. I'm surprised they didn't give you the option to do that.
I'm surprised too, as an option, yeah. Particularly since this is beta, which implies that they don't necessarily want people using it as the default. It's surprising that you can't be like an alligator or whatever, or a dinosaur or something.
They already had the sort of tracking to animate those based on like on recording in messages. Like, you can record one and it follows your face and stuff. So just it feels like the parts are there. That's one of those things I expect to see in a future Vision OS product.
Maybe, yeah. But Apple really wants this to be like the thing that we do and not like a toy. Like, it's, you know, so the personas are kind of an extension of that, where they know that it's not perfect, but it's a pretty damn good first attempt. And in a couple of years, you know, I think Apple wants it to be like the norm of how we take FaceTime calls when we're on Vision Pro. Assuming there's more of them out there and people using them regularly, we'll see a lot of these around. And like I said, it's impressive. Jason looks like Jason. Like, I would know it was him. He didn't have glasses on. His face coloring is a little bit different. His stubble was a little bit different. His hair was, but it's like his facial expressions, even like the way he talks, his mannerisms, like they're all there. So it's a really good first start.
Yeah, if I just joined a FaceTime call or something like that, and you didn't know, you'd see me and you'd instantly know it's me. It's not so far off. Exactly. It's that, but it's just like this version of me that does not at all look real.
Yeah, right. It's very ghostly. Like, the edges are, you know, aren't crisp. If he touches his face, like there's like a white glow where his hand is. If he turns, you can see through his head. Like, there's a lot of issues there, but it's, again, a really good first attempt.
So that's the personas. That is a major feature that people are looking forward to. I kind of want to get to square one with the Vision Pro, kind of the beginning, if you so to speak. I just wanted to ask Jason if there was anything about the assembly and setup of the Vision Pro that kind of stood out as bad or ingenious.
I wouldn't say any of it was bad. I have not gone through guest mode with my wife yet. My understanding is, like, as you're setting it up, it goes through, you put it on, it tells you to look at some dots and pinch and stuff, you know, so it calibrates to your eyes and everything. It's very simple. It's not at all confusing. It has that nice Apple sort of, everything is in wistful glow and there's nice calming background sounds and stuff, which serve additional purpose of, like, lets you calibrate the volume. If you've never put it on before, how do you know if the volume is not working or if it's just not saying something? So you've got to have background settings and stuff. So they do a good job of all that. They put these nice floating windows of, like, videos of a person showing, like, this is how you pinch and zoom. This is how you close a window. This is how you move a window. This is how you resize. So things like that are very simple, but I feel like they do a really good onboarding process. I had the extra step of having to put in corrective lenses. They only fit in one way and they magnetically kind of just snap into place. And then it says, there's like a QR code in the package for them. And they're like, look at that QR code. And it scans it. If you ever set up an Apple TV or anything, you know what it's like. The pass-through video is good enough that you can see your phone fairly well. Like, it's not crisp, pixel perfect, but you can read large print on your phone. You can kind of use your phone for simple things. Face ID don't work with this thing on your head.
There's no Face ID with Vision Pro option in the iPhone.
Yeah, just ignore the top half of my head. The most important parts, just things like changing over out the bands is really simple. Like, you just pull these little tabs, it just pops right off. You just snap the new ones on. It's a really good mechanism. If there's any sort of setup issues, I think it's the fact that the light seals magnetically attached to the thing, and it's not strong enough to support the weight of the headset. But you keep wanting to grab it by where the whole light seal is. And
they're kind of squishy.
Yeah, they're squishy, yeah. And it's the most of the volume of the thing when it's on there. So you keep grabbing it and popping it off.
Which could result in the front falling off.
Yes, you really need to hold it by the metal.
Yeah, when I did mine at the Apple Store, the guy yelled at me because I instinctively reached for the big giant part here.
It's your instinct is to grab the sides and the big bulky fabric-y part. So
you taught me how to grab it. You grab it really from the front.
So doing that, just to move, even just picking up, moving it around on your desk or something like that, don't grab the light seal. You'll just pop it off. It's not a big deal, but it'll just pop right off.
When I did the demo at the Apple Store, and this might be true of all VR headsets, I was impressed. So you put it on. They give you they measure your light seal and they give you the light seal, but light seal is not one size fits all or even most. It's a small, medium, large, maybe medium two or something. But so
there's two sizes and two widths. There's like wide and narrow, and then there's like within that there's small, medium, large, or just small and large. So there's like small, narrow, small, wide, whatever.
So it's not like unique to your face. So when I put it on, like my eyes weren't quite like I can see the holes. And like you go through this little scanny thing, and like maybe I'm wrong, but I think the lenses on the Vision Pro actually adjusted to my eyes, like inside the display.
Yes, so your eyes have what they call interpupillary distance. It's the distance between how far apart your eyes are.
Between your eyes, yeah.
When you have screens in front of your eyes with lenses that blow up the vision and stuff, like really, really close, that needs to be on point. So a lot of headsets have little adjusters that you can move.
That you turn.
You turn, or it's a slider or something. The Vision Pro's one is automatic. That's part of the setup process. It does it till the convergence gets sharp. And it literally moves not just the lenses, but the screens. Like the whole lenses and screens are on a little screw thing, and it with a little servo, and it like moves them all together.
You know, the difference is astounding, because when I put it on, I was like, well, this is great, because they scan my glasses, they scan my face, or I scan my face on the iPhone. But once that little adjustment is made, it's like, oh, okay, here we go. I have a question for you. Have you tried using it without the inserts, but with your glasses on?
No. I don't think they would fit properly. Also, I've seen some people try and stuff them in there, and that's really sketchy, because if your glass touches that glass, they will scratch grass on grass, and you don't want to scratch the glasses in the headset. You're hosed.
So, well, if you take out the inserts from the headset, it's still close enough, you think, to touch like your glasses?
Probably. I don't know. It may be. Yeah, I'm not going to try it. It's $4,000 and it doesn't.
You didn't buy Apple Care for it.
And my glasses are like sort of the multifocal, a different prescription down low than in the middle. So, and that's not what you want, because the screens are always the exact same distance from your eyes, right? And you're looking at reality through video pass-through. It's actually kind of one of the weird things about it is, even though the video pass-through is not as sharp as reality and doesn't have the color gamut, it is the best video pass-through I've ever seen. But one of the things about it that's weird is that my human natural vision when I don't have the headset on is that something is always out of focus. If I don't have my glasses on, then up close stuff is out of focus. If I do have my glasses on, up close stuff is in focus, but distant stuff is out of focus. Or, you know, if I'm looking through the wrong part of my glasses, if I look at something up close through the top part of my glasses, it's not going to be in focus. I have to move my head so that I'm looking through the bottom part where it's the prescriptions, where the magnification's there, because they're like, you know, multifocal readers. When I look through the Vision Pro, everything's in focus all the time. The world is not as sharp because it's a video pass-through, but it's all in focus all the time because I'm actually looking at screens that are always like a centimeter from my face.
I was amazed at how high quality and the resolution.
Yeah.
Like you could read all those words, 4K this and micro LED that, but when you see it, it's like, oh my goodness, like it's so crisp. And I'm sure there are, I haven't tried many headsets other than like the Gear VR that Samsung had, which is nothing. You know, it's the kind of thing that if you can see a pixel, like you can't unsee it. Like it's all you're going to focus on. I zoomed in just a Safari page as far as it would go. Yeah. And it was, you know, the text was as clear as anything.
I think that's the biggest takeaway I could give people who you've seen by now a million videos online and you've seen social media posts and all this other stuff. It's easy to record the screen of what you see and show it. And so people have seen all that online. They've probably seen comparisons to Meta's Quest 3, which I've used. It's easy to go down to Best Buy. There's always a demo unit. And you would look at those things and you would say like, this isn't that different. This thing is $600 and that one's $4,000, you know, starting at 3,500 plus. You're going to get a higher storage and all that other kind of stuff. How are they so similar? This one's can also do, you know, screen mirroring and all that other stuff. That is not the experience you have when you look through it yourself. Like if you've used VR stuff before, if you've used PlayStation VR 2, Quest 3, all the sort of best modern ones, there is no screen door effect, none. The video pass-through is not as high res as reality, but the rendered objects basically look real. Like you cannot see a pixel. There's no gap between pixels. There is the sort of light refraction halos in the lenses, but there's less than there, especially when it's something dark and you're watching a movie, you'll see like the little light ghost fringing on the lenses, but it's less than any other headset product like this I've used. It's really hard to explain just how sharp and crisp it is. Plus dynamic range and color better than anything seen. That level is not just like, oh, the difference between Quest 2 and Quest 3. Like it's not that kind of a leap. It's the leap where like, yeah, that window I just opened looks like a thing. It looks like a real thing.
It's so well made. Like I can't imagine it being any better, if that makes sense. Like it is, you know, looking at whether it's a movie or a window or a photo. And we'll get into a lot of that stuff next week, probably. But it's like you can't find a flaw or a fault or an area to improve on.
The fidelity is not the issue at all. They've reached that level of fidelity where it's like that's what they need. It just needs a wider field of view. And then there's all the other stuff like weight and all that other stuff. But the video pass-through, that fidelity needs to definitely get better, especially in the light. But the color gamut's not wide enough. I look at things that have glowing LEDs. I have a pedal board for my guitar, but this microphone's mute button light. The red isn't right. It's like a pink. It's not because it doesn't have the color gamut on the video cameras to do the pass through, but the displays could display it if I could see it. So there's stuff they need to work on, but like the actual display technology and the eye tracking is straight up magic. If I don't start turning on a bunch of lights in my house, it gets grainy really fast. They have to prioritize frame rate and shutter speed and getting, not shutter speed, well, kind of shutter speed, but like making sure that you get the information in 12 milliseconds, which is insane. It's an absolutely insane stat. If you, the 12 milliseconds that they're talking about is the light, the photons of light hitting the camera sensor to the photons of light being emitted from the screen. Like that's 12 milliseconds. That includes the shutter time, all the processing, and going in. That's nobody's close. It's crazy. It's the best video pass-through ever. But unless you have a very well-lit house, you're going to see graininess, color saturation is going to get worse, you know, stuff like that. This, once I turn on all the lights and it's daytime, or if I step outside with it, I'm like, oh, this is much
better. And that's probably a version 2, version 3. Like, that'll be a big breakthrough once they fix all that.
One thing I was wondering, Mike and I have both done demos of Vision Pro. They're about a half an hour. You've spent longer time with it. Do you, when you take it off, is there any disorientation that you experience afterwards?
It's not disorientation. They do a better job than almost any I've seen of limiting motion sickness. I think I've heard this. I don't particularly get motion sickness from VR, but I've heard from a lot of people, you know, online and stuff who do, and they're like, I don't get any. And part of that is having really, really good, really low latency pass through. But even if you're in a, what they call an immersive experience, basically fully VR, they just do a really, really good job, the head tracking and hand tracking and everything else. But then when you take it off, it's not that I feel disoriented. It's that I feel like my face can breathe. Don't know if you've been scuba diving or snorkeling or something. While you have the mask on, you're not really fully conscious of like, oh, this mask is putting a lot of pressure on my face and my eyes can't breathe. You're just like, ooh, look at all the coral. It's beautiful, you know, stuff like that. And then you swim around for an hour and then you take the mask off and you're like, oh my God. And it feels very much like that. Not only is the field of view a lot like wearing a scuba mask, it's got, you can kind of, you quickly start to ignore them, but there's a fringe around your view where you can't see any. When you take it off, it feels like that. And I think a big part of that is weight. It's not especially heavy compared to high-end VR headsets. The Valve Index weighs a couple hundred grams more. It weighs not that much different than like a Quest 3 or something. But it's all in that front metal part. It's all hanging out over the edge of the light seal in front of your face. So in order to keep it from sliding down your face, you have to have a significant amount of tension pulling that light seal against your face. And that's the part that gets uncomfortable. That and just the light bombarding your eyes. Like you've got screens right in front of your eyes the whole time, like bombarding your face with light. I don't feel like I could wear it all day. If I was super productive with it on, I feel like I'd still be doing it in like hour-long bursts and having to take it off. I feel like it'd be watching a movie on it, like a full two-hour movie, let alone Flowers of the Killer Moon or something. Like, I feel like that's the experience. It would be great, like big old screen and there's cool virtual theaters and all this other stuff. But I feel like I'd get fatigued. Not that, oh, my neck is strained. You know, people are like, oh, there's no neck strain. Oh, no, there's no neck strain. It's not that heavy. But that pressure on your face and that sort of keeping your face from breathing and stuff, it gets tiresome. More so than some other VR headsets that even may weigh as much, but that's because they've got a battery pack in the back or more weight on the things on the sides. It's distributed. It's distributed.
Speaking of the battery pack, did you find it cumbersome?
No, not really. I think they made the right move just considering how much is in it, how much it weighs. Putting a battery in there would have been, it would have made it bigger and heavier and all that other stuff. I don't know why this battery at the capacity that it is this heavy. It's a big aluminum brick and other similar, even metal like battery packs to recharge your stuff just have three times the storage. This, it has high power output because it's basically got a power essentially a laptop, but it's very well shaped. It fits nice and smooth in your pocket. It's kind of taller and a little bit taller and skinnier than an iPhone. The USB-C plug in it, that is how you charge the battery and you pass through power to the headset if you want, is on the same side as the cord, so you can have it plugged in and put it in your pocket. Both cords are coming out the same way, you know? So things like that are clever. I didn't find it to be a problem. I think it's a good, the length of the cord's about right.
Yeah, the rare Apple cable that they got, like the appropriate length.
Yes. For. Yeah, it's not too short.
It's, usually it's too short.
Not too long. They really kind of nailed it.
Yeah, I'm waiting for iFixit to tear down that battery pack. There's probably some circuitry in it or something that...
There's obviously power management.
Right.
But it just doesn't seem like it should cost $200. The battery life, a lot of people are like, 2.5 hours. You're not going to want to use it more than 2.5 hours. It's not really a product meant to use as you go around outdoors and out in your life. Like, both from a software and a hardware standpoint, it's just not what it's meant for yet. I've just tried to not charge it several days just to see how much I get. And what I get is 2 or 3 hour plus long sessions. And then it starts warning me, 10% battery left.
Can you run the Vision Pro without an iPhone? Or is an iPhone required to run it?
It's funny how little it actually works with your iPhone. It doesn't really do anything with your iPhone. After you set it up and it just kind of, it does a lot less than if you're setting up a new iPhone where it can copy over all your apps and all that other stuff. It doesn't do any of that. So it's very fast. It's like when you set up an Apple TV or a HomePod. It's just transferring your Apple ID and then everything downloads on your photos and all that stuff. Just downloads on the device.
Have you tried the Mac Virtual Display feature?
Oh yeah, a bunch of times. It's actually kind of the only way to really be productive. Most of the Vision Pro apps they feel like they're meant for consumption and not for like getting work done. There are things like Word and Excel and stuff like that, but actually navigating them using the eye tracking and pinching and stuff like that, it's slower and harder than using a mouse or a trackpad. And you can hook up a Bluetooth touchpad and a Bluetooth keyboard. And if you're going to do anything productivity-wise on this, highly recommend it. But even then, the apps are kind of simplistic. They're missing features compared to their sort of desktop versions. The Mac Virtual Display is genius. Like, you go to the control center on the Vision Pro to do it on any kind of desktop Mac, but a MacBook, you literally just look at a MacBook that is signed in with the same Apple ID as yours. And it's got a little connect button floating in the air above it. And you just look at it and pinch your fingers. And then boom, your MacBook's display goes black and instead becomes a big floating 4K display right in front of you that you can put wherever you want. And you're just typing and using the touchpad on your MacBook and it's moving the cursor. And then just like Universal Control with an iPad works in this. So you've got your Mac Virtual Display, you're typing, you're using the touchpad. If you just move the mouse cursor off and into a Vision OS app, it's a dot, cursor, and you can use it like a mouse or a touchpad. You can type with your MacBook and it just goes there. It's just Universal Control is seamless. It goes between apps. It's really the only way. If you're trying to get work done, that's the only way to fly. The color saturation and everything about it's great. The latency it's there if you know to look for it. Like, you wouldn't play an action game, but if you were just playing some strategy game or something like that, it'd be fine for just scrolling web pages and typing and getting stuff done. It's latency's low enough.
Speaking of games, have you played many?
I've
non-Mac games, the actual Vision Pro ones.
Yeah, I've done a few things. Yesterday was my sort of get some of these things tested things. There's one, I can't remember the name, but it's basically Beat Saber, except without Saber. So you just hold your hands, they're glowing colors, and you just move two things and try and hit all the things. And it's pretty fun. The best one is Super Fruit Ninja. That is the best example of AR.
That's hilarious, because, I mean, that's been the best for this stuff for, what, a decade?
Yeah, that was...
That's the one that the iPhone that you tested. Like, oh, look at this cool game I could do on my iPhone 2.
I think it was one of the early iPad games, and it was a great example of, like, touch swiping around through stuff. And so it's a great example of hand tracking, but it's also one of the few examples of true augmented reality stuff. Like, so much of what the Vision Pro is doing is a floating window in my environment, and it looks amazing, but it's a floating window. It's not graphics incorporating in my environment. Super Fruit Ninja puts all these little cartoon tufts of grass and rocks and stuff on your ground, but not where the walls are. And then it has like a little cartoon pig that roams around, and he'll like it. It's like a, he poofs in a poof of smoke to teleport, but he'll get up on your furniture and be like on the sofa. And he like walked around on my sofa, but like at the proper height, and you're chopping and stuff like that. And like little pieces of fruit are bouncing properly on the ground. They bounce off the wall properly. They leave little colorful juice splats on the wall, like where your wall is and on your furniture and stuff. So there's a thing where you throwing stars by like holding your hand out, palm up, and then like swiping your other hand on it. Like you're throwing, like, I don't know what gesture.
Like money. Making it rain.
Yeah, like it's the making it rain thing. you do the making it rain thing, and it throws like ninja stars, and they like stick in your walls, your real walls.
When I did my demo at the Apple Store, the little window, the home screen pops up. Like I was sitting at one of their tables, and there's a little shadow perfectly placed on the table as if it's, I'm holding something above it, and it's, you know, the light from above is doing that shadow, and there's no setup, scanning, no process. You don't have to turn around to do a 360 to scan your room. It just does all this stuff automatically in real time, depending on where you are. And it's awareness of what the room you're in and what's around you is just stunning.
Yeah, the 3D mapping, how fast it does it is so good. If you've done AR stuff on your iPhone and they're like, move your iPhone around, and it's like,
right, it's to the point where you're like, I don't want to do this anymore because it's annoying.
It does all that in a millisecond, and it's higher fidelity. And you did a great example of how, since it's video pass through, they do graphics on reality, like the floating windows, everything. Like I said, everything seems like it's a floating. They are there, like they might as well be real. They are rock solid anchored. Right,
like you want to walk around them. They're like part of your environment.
They don't wobble or move a little. They are rock solid. Where they might as well be a physical object. Every little micro movement of your head does not make that thing move in relative space. It's perfect. Right. And they cast shadows on ground and the table or tables or stuff. Not on walls and everything. It's not perfect, right? But the fact that there's just like a little bit of shadow, and if you're in a darker room and they're lit up well, they cast a little bit of light, and they just makes them grounded in reality. It feels like these virtual windows, they exist. They really
feel. There was a video on Twitter yesterday or Sunday, where someone just put a bunch of windows all over their house, and it shows them going from room to room, like the video is playing in the living room, and there's a note on the kitchen, on the refrigerator, the Mac virtual displays in the office. And, you know, it's obviously an exaggerated video, but it really understands like where Apple put the effort in for this stuff. Like, this is their first start to something that's really going to be like the centerpiece of your digital life.
It is one of those things that's very impressive when you first see it and use it. But the more you use it, it's also starting to jump out at me that this isn't necessarily what I want. Like, it's not necessarily the way I want things to work. Is when I launch an app, it's in a window and it anchors itself in place in my environment. If you go to a totally different environment, then that's fine. It'll launch and you can anchor it there. It remembers where it's anchored, but it remembers it's stored in the system. Next time I launch that app, that window, I'm like, wait, didn't I launch Safari? Oh no, it's in the kitchen. I'm turning around. You can see it through walls, but I'm like, oh, there it is. And I have to like grab it from the kitchen and bring it here, or I have to press the little crown to pop it up. And I'm like, I'm just the next remote.
Could you open a second Safari window?
Yeah, I think it would just remember where each. I haven't tried just pulling a tab off, but I think it would just remember.
Or just new, like just a new window.
That's what I mean, like grabbing a tab. There's no button for that, but like I think I could maybe grab a tab and pop it off like you do on a Mac or something. I'll have to try that. It's weird that you'll relaunch an app and go like, where is it? Where'd I leave my app?
Right.
It's a very...
You need like a Legend of Zelda style map of your house that shows where everything
there is. It just shows how there needs to be a new form of window management. There's no window management. you're grabbing the little grab bar at the bottom and dragging it around, and it always faces you as you move it around, and you can resize it. But there's no, like, tile all my windows, bring them all around me, stack them. There's no tools to do any of this stuff, and there needs to be.
There's no, like, expose function where it flies all the windows in from another room, so you just point the tap the one you want.
Yeah, that's what it needs. It needs a like, bring all my windows here, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure they will, and it'll be a super cool animation once they do it.
And they have the opposite. They have a make all my windows go away for a minute so I can just see
my pass like through, a C desktop,
and then bring it back.
Yeah.
But it's very strange to launch something and then it's not there. Did I launch it? I'm looking around. But it also really drives home that at some point in the future, when this is not a big, heavy headset, and it's something that you can wear for hours, and the pass-through fidelity is better and all this other stuff, you can very much see that you would want to just for hours kind of live your life this way. You would love having a digital floating shopping list next to the fridge, just anchored in space. And as I'm looking through the fridge and there's something missing, like right now, I yell at my HomePod to add something to the shopping list. But if I could just kind of glance over at that list and say something and it adds it to the list, or swipe or just run my finger through something to check it off. Oh, wait, we have that, you know, and just figure that times everything else in your life. Just leaving useful little things anchored in the air or all wall or whatever.
Right.
It's awesome. It's just not.
While it's also like doing augmented stuff where you look at something and, you know, it expands.
Yeah. They're all interactive.
Shows you more
they're
information all about it or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, they'd all be interactive
and
stuff. So that's what they mean when they say spatial computing. It's
that term seems kind of goofy. Like we've made fun of it in the past, but when you try it on and use it for 20 minutes, it's like, okay, I understand what they're saying because it's not really AR. It's not really VR.
Yeah.
It is
both of those things.
Everything in it's like you're in a space and you're computing in that space. Like it makes sense. The word makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, we got off topic, but we were talking about gaming. And the virtual games. And then there's some iPad games you can play that are okay. But Steam Link, the iPad Steam Link works. It's included.
Okay.
So I ran a Steam game from my PC.
Is it a VR game?
No, I mean, no, it's not. Steam VR doesn't work. Steam Link is to stream Steam games locally from your PC to like your TV or something. And that's what Steam is.
Okay. Okay.
There's a Steam or your iPad. You could play your PC games on your iPad and you touch for the mouse and stuff like that. But I just used my mouse and keyboard and I set up Diablo 4 to, which isn't a Steam game, but like I added it to Steam and then straight up played Diablo 4 from my gaming PC in a giant floating control window. It worked pretty well. I mean, the resolution's, it's obviously not as crisp as using my real monitor. Stuff, but
did you have a keyboard or a controller?
Yeah, no, I used my PC's like keyboard and mouse because it's really a keyboard and mouse game. But I also tried a game with I paired an Xbox controller that works fine. Mm-hmm. It works just like you do it on your iPad. You just go to Bluetooth and pair one. Controller based games work totally fine. So there's that little bit of latency from just doing wireless network, you know, virtual display, but it's pretty good. And if you have a good local network, you can get really good resolution and frame rate and really good latency and just open up a window and play your gaming PC out on the couch and play your Steam game. It's pretty cool.
You talk about latency. So Vision Pro is Wi-Fi 6. Mm-hmm. Do you think 6E or 7 will help in that regard, or is this just
not especially,
a natural thing that's going to always be there?
Not especially. I mean, those things are more about bandwidth. The latency mm-hmm. stuff that they do is really just about like avoiding conflicts on your local network. It's going to make a millisecond of difference if it's your local network. It's not going to be like, oh, it wasn't smooth and now it's smooth. The only thing that those things improve is, hey, I got off on my own channel that's away from any of my other devices and it's not conflicting, but it's really more about your router. It's not about the device. It's about, hey, how's my router managing traffic?
How's the audio I guess both things, both the little speakers that are on the thing and AirPods Pro, I assume you've tried.
Yeah, I mean, AirPods Pro sound better. Yeah, they're more isolating, yep. Which is good and bad. If you're doing stuff where you're doing the spatial computing stuff, where you're just putting up windows and walking around and living your life, you kind of don't want AirPods because the little speaker things on the headband, they actually sound pretty good, but you're also just getting your regular natural sound from your environment all the time. Whereas sticking earbuds in your ear, now you're not. Now you only hear what the Vision Pro sound is kicking out. You want that if you're doing a movie or something. Also, it prevents anybody else from hearing what you're listening to, which might disturb them. They might just be like, you turn that down.
Is it fairly loud as far as the person next to
you? Oh, like leaking?
To hear?
If you're under halfway, it's not too bad. If you're having a really quiet night on the couch, they're probably going to get frustrated.
They might get frustrated because you're using your Vision Pro while you're supposed to have your
headphones. Well, no, I mean, they're doing something else and you're just like, well, I'm going to watch a movie. You know, and I get that. You know, sometimes that's what you're doing. You know, everybody's having their own little quiet me time and you're like, it's not quite as loud as, but it's almost like when you watch a video on your phone and you've got the sound off and the other people can hear it. You know, it kind of leaks that way. It's directed at your ears, but anything over about a third volume, other people are gonna kind of hear it.
The microphone quality, seemed when we were at the beginning,
it's stellar. Yeah, it's right there by your mouth.
So that's just a first look of Jason's extended experience with the Vision Pro. Next week, we're gonna talk more in depth about whether this product is worth your money. Where is Apple going to go with this product? Things like that. He's working on his review now. Tune in to next week and you can hear what Jason thinks about the Apple Vision Pro. That does it for this episode of the Macworld Podcast, episode 873. Thanks to Jason Cross, Michael Simon, and thanks to you, the audience. Thank you for tuning in. We actually have some bonus content for today's show. We've posted a video of us before we started recording with Jason using the persona he made in the Vision Pro. So if you want to see what a Vision Pro persona looks like, go to Macworld.com, look for the article titled Macworld Podcast Up Close with the Apple Vision Pro, and click on it. There you'll find the video. You can subscribe to the Macworld Podcast on the podcast app, on Spotify, or through any other podcast app. If you have any comments or questions, send us an email at podcast@macworld.com or contact us through X, that's @Macworld, or on Threads, that's @Macworld_HQ, or on the Macworld Facebook page. Join us in the next episode of the Macworld Podcast for part 2 of our Apple Pro discussion. See you next week.